So Paul, we're in 1 Timothy, and Paul's still going over on how to treat different people that are at the church. He's getting to the point to begin to talk about elders. Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear the word elder, I always just think about this really old guy. There's no cape, and he just has a walker, and that's why I picture elder. But what it actually is the word somebody who's valued for their wisdom, one what has a position of responsibility or authority. So that's an elder. So elder, we're talking, be a leader in the church. A pastor or a really high up person would possibly do some teaching, but that's who Paul is talking about here. Sure, there was a bug on the wall.
I swear it just flew away.
No, I trust you. What kind of bug? that's a bunny trail, but one time there was a spider and I had to get rid of it because it was distracting me and other people. But 1 Timothy chapter 5, 17 and 18. And we find it up on the screen as usual. There it is. Jesse, can you read that? All right, who rules well? So they have to rule well, meaning that they're working hard and they're doing a good job, right? They're doing well. And if they're doing well, they deserve, they are worthy of double honor. Now, that's not just, oh, well, we respect them doubly as much, right? It's double honor would be is that they respect them plus also refers to being paid or having a wage, you know, taking care of their financial needs, especially those who are in God's word. So we're talking about pastors, worthy of the work that they're doing. In Deuteronomy 25, verse 4, Sandros. I'm old sometimes. Jalen. All right, so we find out that Paul actually takes that, sounds like an odd place to put it, but it takes that from Old Testament in Deuteronomy. So, and what would happen is back in the day, there was a lot of farms, so that everybody knows, and it's a farming saying. And what's happening is that as you get ready to plant seed on the field, you would take this big, heavy plow to till up the ground, right? You've probably all seen that. And then they make a whole lines in the ground, and then you put the seeds in there. But this plow would be so heavy, in order to go through the dirt, they'd need something to pull it. They couldn't physically pull it on their own. So they would use, like, oxen. Or, you know, it could be beasts of the field. It could be, you know, horses or donkeys. But in this case, oxen, because they're tough, they're strong, and they're low to the ground, right? So the farmer, no doubt, is doing hard work, right? Farmers do hard work, and they sweat. You know, and they get tans with their t-shirts, but they sweat. However, the heavy work, the really heavy work, is not done by the farmer. It's done by the oxen, right? He's pulling this heavy plow. And then from time to time, the oxen would bend over, they'd stop, and they'd eat some of the grass, right? But if you muzzle that oxen, they wouldn't be able to do that. You know, it'd be his muzzle that holds the mouth shut. And it would be a tinge like, no, you can't stop. We need to just keep on working. But they're saying that's against the law. Because the ox was putting in work, right? They're doing all this work. The farmer should not be able, you know, the farmer wouldn't be able to do it without the oxen. So that oxen is doing the labor, right? And he should be able to reap what labor he produced, you know, what was produced from that labor, which would be the stuff coming up from the field. In Luke chapter 10, verse 7, Sandros.
And remain in the same house, eating and drinking such things as they give, for the labor is worthy of his wages, and not go from house to house.
So here Jesus is talking. You know, Jesus is, he has his main 12, but he also had 70 disciples that he sent out to minister to the world, right? And he sent them out, and he's telling them that, you know, when you go out, you know, you go and go to a household and say peace to this household, and that peace returns to you, you know, you'll get blessed, and they'll get blessed. And he's talking about that if they're blessed with food or lodging or whatever it is, they need to be grateful for that. You know, they can't expect that or want more. They can't go house to house. I'm just trying to get more and more of those donuts they have here. You know, because I really like them. You know, it's not about going to house, but they should be grateful for the blessings that people will bestow on them. But also Jesus lets them know is that don't refuse somebody's blessings. Don't refuse that blessings because they're working. They're actually working. They're laboring, doing the work of God. And with that, they're worthy of a reward. So, you know, if you're laboring, it's right that you get paid. You know, or you get something for that work. It's right. It's, you know, we shouldn't be like, oh, well, yeah, I want everything for doing nothing. But, you know, if I'm working hard, yeah, I deserve something. Paul uses both these verses to demonstrate a picture that somebody deserves double honor. You know, not that a pastor should be preaching in order to get paid. He's preaching because he's called to do it. However, being paid allows him to be free to preach the word. Meaning there's a lot of things out there. There's a lot of distractions out there in the world. And there's a lot of things that, in this instance, cost a lot of money, right? Lodging, food. You know, and if pastor, for him to focus on the word or focus on the work at hand, he should be free from worrying about those things and just focus on the word. Because there's a lot more than pastoring than just maybe 3 hours of talking in front of people a week. You know, there's a lot of things behind the scenes, a lot of studying. So his labor is worthy of a wage. 1 Timothy chapter 5, 19 through 20. Stephen? Accusation. Elder. Alright, so there are times we may feel uncomfortable what the pastor is talking about. Right? It might be true, but still, sometimes it's hard to hear. Sometimes it's convicting. Sometimes we don't like seeing that. And people, in general, sometimes we may not want to do it, but we like to complain. And some people complain more than others, right? So people complain a lot. People tells Timothy not to listen to every single complaint. You know, however, if it keeps happening, or if two or more witnesses say the same thing, then you need to look into it. Yes, you need to look into it, but just don't think that something's wrong just by one person saying something. You know, but then if you look into it and the pastor is sinning, rebuke that sin in front of everyone. So this isn't saying about just anybody, but it's saying about pastors. Rebuke them in front of everybody. It'd be kind of embarrassing, right? You know, being pointed out in front of everything. But there's a lot of responsibility as being a pastor, because he is an example. And he will always be an example for God. You know, hopefully it's a good example, but if need be, he'll be a bad example of what not to do. And people need to know that, because they need to know that it's not all right to misrepresent God. Right? And they need to see that and see that there is consequences for actions, especially somebody in a higher authority, responsibility position. But hopefully it's a good, you know, you're always in a good church where there's good examples. 1 Timothy chapter 5, 21 and 22. I'll go ahead and read that. I charge you before God in the Lord Jesus Christ, in the elect angels, that you observe these things without prejudgment or prejudice, doing nothing with partiality. Do not lay hands on anyone hastily, nor share in other people's sin, keeping yourself pure. Prejudgment or being prejudiced, partiality, those are all going hand in hand, right? You know, it's being quick to judge somebody. Judging somebody for not knowing much about them, or if you like them, it's the same thing as there is. If you like them, then you're like, oh, they're okay because they're my friends. It's kind of like the Montagues in the Capulets. Anybody? His little English test? Nobody? Romeo and Juliet? Are the Hatfields and McCoys? That's where my mind would probably go more. But I don't know. I still predate myself on that one. Now it's, so somebody who just feels like, oh, just because that name, I either hate them or I love them. You know, they're talking about families. There's two families in Romeo and Juliet, and they hate each other so much just because of their last names. Now, laying hands on anyone hastily. It's not talking about fighting somebody. You know, we might, oh, I'm going to lay hands on him. No, it's not talking about that. What happened back then is when, like, a pastor would lay hands on somebody, that means is that they would be like the up-and-coming person, the one maybe possibly taking over their job. You're basically blessing them and saying, this is the person that you need to be like. This is the person what has authority over you. I'm blessing him. I'm laying hands upon him. And Paul's saying, don't do that hastily. Just like you shouldn't know something about somebody, but look past it just because you're your buddies, or just because you're friends, just because you like them. You shouldn't look past their sin. Because you know they're sinning, yet you look past it. And if you do that, you're taking part in that sin. You're sharing in that sin with them. So he's saying, don't do that. So there's a lot of things you don't do, right? And then we get to Timothy, 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 23. Jesse? So this advice seems to be, you know, just coming out of left field to me. I'm not sure how, if you guys really think about it or thought about it, but Paul is talking about not sharing in somebody's sin and staying pure straight to drinking a little wine. You know, people who love to drink use this verse and abuse this verse all the time. But it seems like, you know, Paul's not the sort, it's like he has this train of thought. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, you should have a little bit of medicine for your stomach's sake, Timothy. And yeah, Timothy was very dear to Paul and was like a son to Paul. And I know he'd be concerned about Paul. I mean, he's concerned about Timothy. Sorry. But he has this train of thought, and he's talking about the elders and not sharing sin, not being partiality. And I could tell because of verse 24, we'll get there, but he's on that same thought. So we need to look in a little deeper to this. And with that, I just want to ask you a couple questions as far as, has anybody ever been to Mexico? Let's hear. No? What about out of the country? Anywhere out of the country? Yeah, and so typically the rule of thumb is be careful when you're drinking the water when you're out of the country, especially third world countries, as far as somebody who's not as developed or has a lot of healthy systems, if you will. Because has anybody ever heard of Montezuma's Revenge? No? So it's a stomach bug. It's a stomach bug. So Stephen's heard of it, right? So it messes up your stomach, right? And so if you would drink the water, and today, now with all the filters and the latest and greatest, I think things could be changing. But especially when I was a teenager, you go down to Mexico, especially like Rocky Point or the border towns, and you don't drink the water because we're not used to those bacteria that are in that water. It would make you be in the restroom for a long time, put it shortly and nicely. Right. Well, I mean, you know, nowadays they have, I don't know if you've ever seen that, the Life Straw, where you're supposedly be able to just drink right out of the stream and stuff. Have you? Yeah, I don't know if I'm brave enough, but maybe.
If you want to drink out of the stream, the water flowing over something.
Oh, uh-huh. Okay, that's good tip. Good tip when you're out there hiking, you don't have water. But bacteria was not discovered until like the 1600s. So it sounds like a long time ago, but we're talking Old Testament time. It predates 1600 by a ton, right? So they didn't know about bacteria. And that water in New Testament times, they didn't have newfangled filtration systems and everything. And they did have where they had sewer systems. But, you know, usually the sewer systems run right into the waterways. So they didn't know about certain things, right? They knew certain things, and that what they'd done is kind of crazy, and it's amazing. But the water back then, especially in cities, our big cities, was not clean, or typically was not clean, unless there was a well or something. But this city didn't have clean water. And during the stages between where grape juice turns into wine, it does kill certain bacteria. It can kill certain bacteria. And I'm saying all this, just giving you a little details, thinking about what's going on in Ephesians. We're in Ephesus. It's the church of Ephesus. What Timothy's taking over, what he's leading. And Paul talks in Ephesians about the people over in Ephesus. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 18. Jalen? Right? So Ephesus was known as a party city. You know, they'd get drunk every night, and that's what they were known for. Just all kinds of parties. Dissipation means wastefulness. It's wasteful. It's squandering. He's saying that being drunk squanders money, energy, resources. It's just wasteful. Drunkenness is a problem and is sin. Was Paul giving Timothy a free pass? Oh, that's all right. You could do it because I like you. No, Paul just talked about sharing in sins and not having partiality, staying pure. It makes sense to me that Timothy, he would have known about the letters to the Ephesians. He would have known how Paul addressed drunkenness. So Timothy probably, did not want to drink any wine. Made it set out. It's like, I'm not going to drink any wine. I'm only going to drink water. I'm going to be a good example to them. He probably said that. However, because of that water, in its unclean state, Timothy was frequently sick. A little wine would have settled his stomach. Paul doesn't feel that Timothy would have been sharing in sin or making a bad example, but be an example for doing things responsibly in a matter that they needed to drink. And I want to emphasize little, because like I said, this verse is so abused by people that like alcohol. That he's saying that they needed to drink. There's a situation where there's dehydration, being sick and being hydrated. But today, there is a definitely different, and especially in the United States. We could drink the tap water. We could drink it straight out of the faucet. It's not going to kill us. Now, this is the same time where alcohol today is the number one addictive drug out there. There's people what get addicted so easily. They might think they're not, but I've been there, and I know tons of people where they're too many times they don't know when to stop drinking. They can't just stop at one. The best way not to get drunk is not to start. It is. I mean, there is also, in that same sense, what I feel like Paul is talking about is Timothy being so strict. And when we're so strict, we border on legalism because of God with his grace you know, we are free to do all sorts of things. In Proverbs 29:11, tendrils. So alcohol has a nasty habit of getting rid of us, the ability for us to control emotions. You know, in a life where you swing from one emotion to the next at these whims, it's usually filled with rash, bad decisions and violent outbreaks. That's just typical. You know, that's just typically what happens. And then in 1 Corinthians 10:23, Stephen.
All things are lawful for me, but not all things are helpful. All things are lawful for me, but not all things
edify. You know, the grace of God is so forgiving. But that doesn't mean that we need to always push the boundaries or dance on that line and going, oh, I'm still good, but I'm right here on the line. You know, it doesn't say that. It's saying that, you know, there are things we are able to do. It doesn't mean that they're good for us. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Verse 24 and 25. Some men's sin are clearly evident, preceding them to judgment. But those of some follow later. Likewise, the good works of some are clearly evident, and those that are otherwise cannot be hidden. Have you ever seen, and this morning it was kind of a good thing, but have you ever seen a storm roll in? Especially on the mountain, because we could see so far. You see that storm coming in. You see that dark cloud off in the distance. And it almost seems like it's moving slow as it creeps over the hills and the mountains before it. But before you know it, it's right upon us. It is evident that we're going to get some rain, right? At least rain. In some cases, this time of year, you know, maybe snow. But during monsoons, it's like, okay, you can see that monsoon coming in. And it's kind of crazy. Especially, I've seen it down in White River. And I don't know, there's like the little valley between the mountains. You just see that dark cloud coming in. But there are times that nothing happens. You see it off in the distance, and then nothing happens. Or that storm just pops on us. And then all of a sudden, it's just a downpour, and it just releases all sorts of water. It's like, where'd this come from? I'm drenched now. Some people's reputation precedes them. Good and bad, we know what kind of works that's going to happen, right? Others, their works are more hidden. Yet with time, all things will be revealed. Things will not be remain hidden forever. Things come to light. Paul's been talking about picking out elders for the church. It shouldn't be a quick decision. Shouldn't be rash. Because we need to see how things turn out. You know, we need to know all the facts to make a good decision. You know, we might have to have a little bit of time, a little wait, have a little patience to see if this is the right person. Typically, most churches have a rule where, you know, a new visitor doesn't just jump into ministry, a new person just starting the church, they need to wait a little bit of time. And that's just so that's because of all this. It's just, you know, you need to know who that person really is. You know, they might seem great right away, but you need to make sure, because there's a lot of responsibility in for being that example. You need to figure out if it's good or bad. You know, sometimes people could be too rigid. And I know it's a little gray area. There's, you know, we need to be strict and not sinning, but we can't go into legalism, because it's not what we do or what we don't do what saves us. We're saved by the grace of God, and we should always want to do good because we are saved, but good works don't save us. Right? So there's that fine line between being too rigid but we can't be too loose either. They mean well, but not everything's black and white. You know, we can't let sin remain. We need to point it out, but we can't prejudge or have partiality. You know, an elder needs to have a good work ethic. Not afraid of doing the hard work or getting their hands a little dirty, you know, doing the things, perhaps talking about things that people might feel uncomfortable about, but they need to do it because it's the right thing to do. You need to be able to point out sin. You need to let people know the truth. In Psalms 23, or 32, verse 8. Jesse? So Jesus is always there for us. He's always there to help us every step away we go. It says with his eyes. So if his eyes there, he's always watching us. He's always there with us. We have a presence of God with us wherever we go. And the reason why that, because he loves us. He wants to take care of us. He wants to instruct us. You know, we need to be ready to go when he says go. And when he says to wait, we need to be able to wait. Sometimes the latter, meaning waiting, sometimes that's harder for people. Sometimes we can't just always like, I just want to go, Lord. But sometimes he wants us to wait. And there's reasons for that. We need to be okay with both of those things. We'll close in prayer.